Yo, what is up? Welcome to another edition of Across the Pitch with myself, Dave Miller, and Jose Nunez to my left. Jose, how are we doing on what has been an incredibly emotional day for the city of Philadelphia and everyone associated with it?
Well, we are a minute in out of our 45, but I'm doing all right, man. What a crazy day. I think it would be wrong for us to not acknowledge number 62. I think that's the jersey number he wore for the game as well when he was at Subaru Park. Jason Kelce retiring, Philadelphia legend forever. I don't even know that the city needs to wait till 2029 to be able to call him a Hall of Famer, certainly here within the boundaries of Philadelphia and Pennsylvania as a whole, and will be considered one. But that aside, I'm doing well, really anxious about tomorrow.
Yeah. I was going to say, tomorrow's going to be a big game. I mean, the way that Union have obviously started the season, it's interesting to say the least. The amount of goals they have shipped is obviously a concern. Obviously, who knows? Tomorrow you could arguably classify it as a free hit, but, just quickly going back to Kelce, I mean, I think he sort of said he's obviously been a Hall of Fame already. I think the Hall of Fame in 2029 is probably going to be the most attended event in Hall of Fame history, I think.
Maybe.
I've already started making plans to potentially head out myself to Camden for it. Jason Kelce just is Philadelphia. If anyone embodies the city more than him, it's him. A guy from Cleveland, Ohio, to make this place his home. And again, as you sort of said, no. Right, his group chat, obviously, just everyone he thanked, obviously speaking about teachers, going off to, thanking his family, his wife, and saying how she is the one that's carried him through, the best years of his career, on and off the field, just an embodiment of how amazing of a person he is. But, of course, we're here to discuss the Kansas City Chaos and the huge game against Pachuca tomorrow at Subaru Park. Before we go and look at the Pachuca game, we have to obviously look at that crazy game on Saturday night, which ended actually, we thought before the game with the changes that had been made, we were very unsure as to how it would pan out. And, again, you see a fair few players getting their first MLS start, Jeremy Raffanello obviously making his first MLS start, Chris Donovan leading the line, Quinn Sullivan alongside him, then Baizo and Harry at the fullback. It was a lot of changes. Was that the sort of lineup you were expecting heading into the game, especially as big of a shout as Raffanello starting?
No, I mean, honestly, as I wrote a little bit earlier within my Substack, I just, if you would have told me that Andrew Rick was going to be signed to a short-term loan and Jeremy Raffanello was going to start, I would have looked at you and said, are you crazy? What is going on? The world is ending. So I was very surprised, I should say. But honestly, I hate to say it, but with how, and I don't want to jinx it, but with how easy it is to make the playoffs this year, a team like Philadelphia coming in sixth place, maybe fifth place, I personally, and this is again on the record, I've said it many times, don't put a lot of weight on the supporter shield because of the way that the league is, right? They have playoffs and they have to be played, so the supporter shield doesn't really mean anything to me. Now if the supporter shield meant that you were the winner of the league and you get that star on top of the crest, it would mean the world to me, but just the way that the United States does it, I don't put a lot of weight on it. So I'm okay with the Union throwing away some of these games, especially in the middle of this hunt for continental success, right? intercontinental, I should say, success here in CONCACAF. International is the word I'm saying. I'm so sorry. Yes. I'm okay with the Union going and just, despite the controversy, walking away from Kansas with 1 point, when in reality, to me right now, the goal is, can the Union win CONCACAF Champions Cup, and can they secure themselves for the Cup, Champions Cup next year? But also, Dave, how incredible would it be for Philadelphia to qualify and play the Manchester Cities of the world in the Club World Cup? That would be an unbelievable thing.
I think, as you sort of said, it'd be an incredible thing for the Union to go off and, participate in a global event, obviously with the rebranded Club World Cup. And, the last two times the Union have competed in the only two times the Union have competed in the CONCACAF Champions League, now Champions Cup, whatever iteration of the tournament you want to look at it as, they've reached the semi-finals. And to be honest, they went into both second legs with a chance of at least getting to the final. Obviously, the LAFC one will probably sting a bit more than the Club America one. But yep. I mean, you know, I know we've seen like this team can compete. And I think it's like, with how easy it is to make the playoffs, and I'm sure. And even again, you could even argue it's easy to qualify for the CONCACAF Champions League with the different avenues now. Obviously, I'm not too sure if the Open Cup is gonna be considered a route for it. Cause I know sometimes, because I know obviously the winner was sometimes qualified beforehand. But I mean, even Leagues Cup, I'm not too sure if how the whole thing will work out this year in terms of whether it be the four semifinalists go in or the third, obviously the two finalists and the third place finisher. I'm not too sure, but there's more avenues to get into the CONCACAF Champions Cup next season. So again, as you sort of said, of course, before you put your eggs in your basket and trying to finish first in the Eastern Conference, trying to win the Support Shield, although it's a nice trophy to, or it's a nice thing to win, and you know, it gives you home advantage in the playoffs. Again, it's not the end of the world because there's so many different avenues for the Union to qualify for that tournament. And as you sort of said as well, you don't know when they will have another chance to qualify for such a big event like the Club World Cup. So again, why not put your eggs in that basket and see what happens?
And listen, I want to just say this out loud, and I'm not looking ahead of Pachuca. Obviously, it's a very difficult tie. Both Jim sort of alluded to it being difficult, but certainly Pachuca's head coach, as I'm watching the press conference, mentioned how tight the margins are going to be in this matchup. But if you look at the bracket, man, after Pachuca, it is another team from Costa Rica, and then another team that honestly, I don't think I've ever heard about, Robin Hood. I guess another team from the Caribbean, which is fine. And then after that, it really comes down to two giants eating each other in terms of Club America and Chivas de Guadalajara. So giants right there. And then you have New England against another Costa Rica team. So then after that, honestly, you're looking at I'm just gonna do this, but like either New England, Club America, or Chivas. And after that, you're in the final. You're in the semifinal. So like the bracket is so kind to the Union that for them to choose to not put all their eggs in this basket would be bananas. And of course, they find themselves in this really interesting situation of having to come up with and I was maybe being a little tactical with the way I asked it today during the press conference. I asked Jim, how do you deal with Idrissi and Rondon if you're Nate Harriel, right? What is the message? And no real point that he actually mentioned Nate, but mentioned, you know, it's going to be a team effort, which leads me to believe that maybe Nate will not be on the right side dealing with that left-sided attack of Pachuca, or there's going to be some sort of makeup formation because they have to with Damian Lowe and Jack Elliott both being unavailable for the match tomorrow. So whatever happens tomorrow, it is a free-flowing, high-scoring, high-conceding Pachuca team that's just going to come strong. And I'm excited to see this because I'm genuinely curious and interested, but how many Pachuca fans will be in that stadium? It's a Mexican team, which means that there's probably going to be a good following. Listen, if we saw, and Dave, you saw the videos, if we saw that many Costa Rican Saprissa fans in the stadium at Superpark, I think you can safely maybe multiply it, because how often does Pachuca come to Philadelphia if you're a Mexican fan, right? So like, it's going to be bananas. So I think I said this to you and Mike last year. Jim Curtin and Philadelphia have no right to choose what, you know, to be saying we want to win everything. It's like, win what you can right now. And right now, all eggs should be on the basket of the CONCACAF Champions Cup. And I really hope that that's the message that's resonating within the locker room.
100%. I think, as you sort of, you know, alluded to there, obviously, with the big, you know, the big absentees defensively, you know, tomorrow you're not going to have Jack Elliott, who's suspended. You're not going to have Damian Lowe either. You know, and again, obviously, Andre Blake could be in contention to play, but I can't see them risking Andre. And again, sort of, and this probably links up to my point I was going to bring us to regards to the not just the Kansas City game, but every game this season, just how frail defensively the Union have looked and how much they have struggled defensively this season. I mean, you saw throughout the game, even especially in the early stages, probably in the first 25 minutes, how easy it was for Sporting Kansas to really play their way through the Union back line. You know, Johnny Russell in the first couple of minutes having that chance where he just literally, you know, just got, waltzed his way through, and you know, obviously Semler made the save, and then another similar moment about 10 minutes later when that defense splitting pass like was played through for Eric Tommy. Okay, he was offside, but again, it was just that easy, just to, you know, like with a click of a finger, the Union defense was just at sixes and sevens, and you know, just split open. And of course, well, you know, and that's sort of been a trend throughout the season. You know, the goals they conceded against Saprissa, you know, they've conceded 5 goals in the CCL. They conceded, you know, twice at home to Chicago in a game which probably, if you'd have looked at that and the schedule had gone, I could easily see the Union keeping the clean sheet. Of course, they didn't. That's not how it panned out. Again, the Union looked fragile in that game as well. You know, like Chicago had chances to probably score 3 or 4. And obviously, Union had massive let-offs. You know, and that's just, it's a massive concern, not just going into the game against, you know, high quality players with Rondon and Idrissi in Pachuca, and obviously a Mexican giant, really. They're very, very big, a very big team in Mexico. It's just going to be a huge, huge, you know, task for however they line up. I hope we could even see the back five rolled out, and, you know, Harriel and, you know, them playing 3 central defenders, maybe dropping a Bedoya in to make a back three or something. Who knows? Like, it's a genuine concern to see how they are going to try and, you know, not just one, mask up the defensive frailties that they have shown this season, but to be able to actually put up a competent back line that's going to be able to deal with, as you sort of alluded to as well, like the attacking threats that Pachuca will offer.
Yeah, and you know, to maybe circle back to the Kansas game, I think it's also important to recognize that maybe that message of, you know, Champions Cup is what matters is sort of what was echoing through the locker room, and like genuinely so, because we as press and fans saw Jim use substitutions very early on, very, very early on, which is very rare. But also even pre-planned substitutions, which he even said in the post-game press conference that he hates doing, in terms of bringing out Mbaizo, bringing out Kai, also doing some shifting around and you know, giving Raffanello 45 minutes to just go out and keep it 0-0, which obviously did not happen with the way it went. But ultimately, the Union just doing their best to get in and get out with 1 point. And if you want to touch on the controversy, we can. Obviously, the team looked a little discombobulated. They looked a little off. But I think that, again, has to do with playing so many games in such quick succession, but also thinking ahead, unfortunately. And they will never admit it. And Jim will never admit it, right? They focus on the opponent in front of them. And there's certainly some truth to that. But if I'm a player in that locker room, I would think, yeah, CONCACAF is the goal right now. This, I hate to say meaningless, but semi-meaningless game against Sporting Kansas City is just in the way between me and international soccer against a Mexican giant. And what I hope that with a 7 p.m. kickoff, which brings its own challenges for working individuals, never mind families, I really hope that the stadium is in better shape in terms of attendance for a match like Pachuca, because the Union will need every single voice and every single body in those seats to drown out, I think, what I can expect maybe 3 times what we saw in terms of Costa Rican fans who showed up to Saprissa on a random, was it Tuesday as well? Or was it, I can't remember, Wednesday maybe? A random Wednesday in you know, February? Like, at 8:15, a much later kickoff. So I don't know, man. That Kansas game, I put no weight behind it. Though Damian Lowe, awesome performance. I think the shining star out of that match, in all reality. And yes, Alejandro Bedoya scored that goal. Thankful for it. But how about that little bit of controversy there with the throw-in? What did you make of that? What a mess that was.
Well, I mean, it's just compounds to the referee hold out whatever the hell's going on to start the season. Obviously, at the time, like I'm writing up my report for the game, so I'm like half keeping an eye on the game. Because it was not being funny. The ball was like in the middle of the park, you know, which a bit of a scramble in there. So you're like, okay, I can get my head down and write about, you know, the Gazdag penalty, like the Gazdag incident when he went down the box, the Leibold obviously hitting the crossbar with his attempted slice clearance. I mean, writing about that, summarising that up, and then you know, I look up and there's Damian Lowe causing some havoc, and you even get a corner, and I'm like, okay, this is dead now or never. And of course, you know, it wasn't the best ball in the box. Obviously, it was perhaps too close to the goalkeeper, but kudos to Adi Badoy for an incredible finish. I think in the circumstances, on your weak foot, first time on the volley, you know, you haven't got time to take a touch. It was instant reaction as well to someone put his foot through it. You know, a great finish and a great goal. And, you know, again, it was clearly a Kansas throw, and you can obviously understand the frustrations, but you are obviously it was enjoyable to listen to the boiled piss from the Kansas City commentators, who obviously was like, it was, I think they said the line was Ali Badoy, who hasn't scored a goal since the Reagan administration scores for the Union.
Devin Kerr, that's Todd Lewis actually interviewed him in his show not too long ago, or maybe I just started digging through the archives as I was trying to get caught up on what he has done over the years before I really got to meet him. But yeah, no, it's, I think what was more telling was Peter Vermees, the head coach of Kansas City, sort of, I think, trying his best to not lean on the whole idea of replacement referees being lesser, etc., but rather, how is it, you know, a referee, regardless of, you know, Union or not Union, should not let a game go past the, you know, if this it's 4 minutes, it's 4 minutes, especially when it's at the middle of the field. In fact, actually on the defensive end, technically, of Philadelphia, with it being within their own half, if I recall. But, yeah. You know, fast forward, I hate to say it, but I don't know, Kansas, I don't think that booting the ball 45 yards or however many meters for you, Dave, out in the UK, like, just clear your lines. Like, even a veteran goalkeeper, like who they have, whose name's escaping me, Tony Maia. Mila? Okay. Certainly over 10 years of being in the league, I would think. You'd think that he'd understand how to punch the ball out and not just let it sort of, you know, quiver its way out to Alejandro Bedoya, who, credit to him, and Jim said it out loud in the press conference on the record, like, many players would just belt that ball as hard as they could and frankly have it find its way to the 30th row of the supporter stand. But Alejandro just had the calm and the composure, which I think comes with the idea of being a veteran, a pro who's been around the league long enough to realize maybe I should just feather it in and understand the circumstance of where he is, what time it is within the clock, et cetera, not letting adrenaline just, because I've been guilty of that, Dave, you know, playing in amateur soccer and even, you know, high school, et cetera. Like, if I was in that position, dude, I would be belting that ball as hard as I could, trying to get a deflection in, right? But no, Alejandro Bedoya, being the professional that he is, went ahead and just nicely feathered it in to get that goal. And again, escape Kansas with a point, which even as it stands now, and granted, it's technically, what is it, technically match week three, has the Union in ninth place. So, like, yeah, they're still within playoffs if you were to look at it right now, which obviously it's such a pointless thing to look at. But nonetheless, I don't know if you have any final thoughts on Kansas. Obviously, you wrote the report for AAT. Check it out on the website. Any final thoughts before maybe we move to Pachuca for another 10 minutes or so, 15 minutes tops?
I think it was obviously, as I said, the match was probably the unlikeliest of points. I think even as the Union were like pushing players forward and really going for it, I think, to be honest, if ironically it is what happened, if anyone was going to be the Kings, if anyone was going to allow the Union to get a point or anything from the game, it was going to be Kansas City. And of course, they were the Kings of their own, well, you know, they were the ones at fault for their own undoing, really, as you sort of alluded to. That poor punch out from Media allowed Badoa to capitalize. But yeah, I think it's perhaps a positive sign to see. I think I saw someone on Twitter say the 2023 Union probably lose that game, and I probably agree. But I think it's good to see that, you know, the squad rotation coming in and Jim's, you know, properly, you know, actually utilising his squad. Obviously, good to see Anderson again get some more minutes, and he should have scored as well. I've forgot that Anderson should have scored as well. I think about 4 yards out, he had a header at the front post and tried to guide it across to the far post and went just wide. Perhaps didn't get the ideal contact with it, but I mean, again, he's had a good start to the season as well, which is obviously great to see a younger striker come in and have the somewhat impact he's had. I mean, it's good. It's a good thing for the future.
Yeah, and I think maybe this is a perfect transition over to Pachuca in terms of, you know, you talk about Marcus Anderson and his name coming up. In terms of wandering, you know, a brand new addition, so young from the third division of Spain, this being ahead of someone that was thought to be a replacement for Julian Carranza in Tibaribo, just a really interesting comment from Jim, and I'll actually read it to make sure that I'm not misquoting the head coach, but you know, he mentioned how where is it? During practice yesterday, I think he mentioned how we had a good healthy discussion and talked about the challenges because we aren't training a lot together. We're basically playing, recovering, and there haven't been a lot of reps with the top group. Every striker looks better when Kai Wagner is serving them balls or Nate Harriel is getting to the end line and cutting them the ball back, and he hasn't had many of those reps because he had an injury in preseason where he missed almost 3 weeks. So we spoke about that. We spoke about doing it more consistently every day in training. I think we will have a good response from Ty to fight his way up the depth chart. I say it all the time. The game in training tells the truth, which leads me to believe, man, this ankle injury and the fitness on top of whatever else just has Ty Baribo below Marcus Anderson in the depth chart, which is kind of unimaginable, right? If you would have told me this last year that someone from the third division of Spain, unknown, was going to suddenly show up and take over Ty Baribo's spot and displace him all the way to the bottom, I would have told you you're crazy. Never mind even Chris Donovan being ahead.
Yeah, I think, again, it's probably another indication of one, perhaps, you know, the Union aren't signing the players that Jim is perhaps wanting. I don't know how the communication or how the line of communication works between Ernst and Jim when it comes to transfers. But again, we've seen now three players that were signed on a permanent basis from last season. Pereira, Torres, and now obviously Baribo, who have all swiftly fallen out of favour after joining the team, which is obviously a slight concern. And, you know, and again, even the signings that came in this year, of course, very, very limited. Though, you know, the limited ones, obviously, Semler's obviously one that is in the team by choice. And obviously, Anderson are the only two that have really, been really heavily involved in the team. And of course, you look at other players like Ngarbo, who's only really been on the bench for the CONCACAF Champions Cup games because, again, the Union are allowed to have a larger squad, a larger substitutes bench for those games. I don't think he was involved. No, Ngarbo wasn't involved on the game on Saturday. So again, is it an issue where Jim and perhaps Ernst aren't on the same wavelength when it comes to signings? Has Jim got an input? And I've probably said this a million times. Has Jim actually got an input in what players come through the door? And that's probably the most concerning thing. If again, a player which they spent a lot of money for the Union on is, as you sort of alluded to, Jose, is at the bottom depth chart at the moment, and as you sort of mentioned, like, you know, the ankle injuries perhaps hampered him a bit, and whatever else is going on. Again, it's not ideal, it's not good enough, especially when you look at the depth behind the two starting strikers, and no disrespect to Anderson, no disrespect to Chris Donovan. It's not the standard in the MLS where you look at and think it's going to get you to a championship or two, you know, to where you need to be, especially when you look at teams like Inter Miami, the depth they've got, and even like Columbus Crew, you know what I mean, like the depth they have behind the behind Hernandez and Cujo Hernandez and players like that. Like, it's not ideal, to say the least.
Well, and listen, how to talking not ideal and you know, players being out of favor or maybe below certain spots in the depth chart. Todd Lewis made this point very, very clear, and I didn't even really think about it because I'm thinking to myself, Nate Harrell's just playing so well. He didn't play too much against Saprissa, play him on Saturday against Kansas City. But then Todd said best, like, what is it going to take for someone like Matt Rowell to actually get field play, right, to get time on the field? Because Nate is not a left back. Like, why wasn't Matt Rowell playing there and you put, you know, Nate at the right side? Obviously Mbaiso has to play. So like, what does Matt Rowell need to do to actually get playing time? Right. And this is one of those situations. And even, you know, like five steps back, like think about the pieces that the Union have moved out. Don't you think Saturday would have been, Kansas City would have been a great Torres game, right? Like just sort of, I hate to call it like garbage time, garbage minutes, but like, it's a game that obviously the Union are not really totally set on winning, would be okay with a draw. Obviously, halftime came and it felt like the Union made moves that either were planned, pre-planned, or sort of adjusting at the moment per Jim, as he mentioned in the press conference of like, yeah, well, we felt it and we decided to go for it. It's like, of course you're going to say that because of what happened, right? Finished the game with a draw and you can say that. But nonetheless, you know, I do wonder about some of these players where Brandon Craig gets loaned to, what was it, El Paso, Locomotive. That's fine. He supposedly was too good for Union 2, but not good enough for the Union. Matt Rowell seems to fit that mold too. Too good for Union 2, but not good enough to be with the Union. So why is he sticking around? Is it, maybe it's probably depth because of Kai. If Kai goes down, like, is he the next man up? Like, well, but obviously not if Nate Harrell is playing left back over Matt Rowell. So like, does Nate technically hold the number one spot for right back, but also the number two spot for left back? It's an interesting dynamic of what we as press and fans are seeing from the Union in terms of how they're actually going to utilize the bodies. And again, Jim said it out loud. He said it on the record. He said it best. I don't think that folks, and I've illustrated this within a chart. I showed it to you, Mike, other people. It's online. How many bodies are truly going to be missing this summer? It's going to be like eight guys who are just going to be coming and going with different competitions. Look no further than, honestly, mid-March or late March, 21st through probably the 19th or 20th onwards, because Blake and Lowe go to Nations League play out in Texas. And then you have probably, I would imagine, for the Olympic tune-up, you have Nate Harrell and Jack McGlynn going over to Europe. One match has only been announced so far on the 25th against Thierry Henry's France. I would think that there's a second match probably going to be added to that window since they can and just maybe stick around Europe and play a second opponent. More to be determined on that. But just, man, like, this depth is going to be crazy. And I just hope that the Union actually did enough. It'll be really interesting to see really how any team handles the summer, especially those that are good enough to have internationals that would disappear during these tournaments versus bottom of the barrel teams who are going to keep all of their starters because they're all not technically, you know, international caliber players. So neither here or there, maybe just a long rant there on in terms of the depth chart and man, how meaningless it is to try to predict this, because no matter what, Jim just comes up with something else.
Yeah. I think, again, interesting as you alluded to, is Brandon Craig going out on loan. And again, and your fourth choice centre back is obviously Macania. Is he potentially get a game tomorrow if they are that desperate for defensive depth? Because of course we've seen Nate Harrell play the right sided centre back in the back three, but do you really fancy him playing as a centre back in the back four against a bulldozer like Rondon, who's just going to pick on Harrell for the whole game? If you do play a back four, how would you then approach that? Because I'm not entirely too sure how Pachuca line up. I don't know if you've had a deep dive into that yet.
Not too deep, though. Let me just go ahead and say this. Okay, good. And this roster is outdated still, I believe. Yeah, so the roster that was submitted a month or so back, maybe 2 months at this point, I can't remember. That was floating around, right, where we saw that there was no Torres, there was no, obviously, Bedoya at the time, no Semla. I'm looking at it, and those faces are still missing, but one name that you just mentioned that was actually part of this roster, and this roster has obviously grown again. Bedoya has played, Semla has he played against Saprissa. Macaña is actually part of this roster, so he is eligible to play tomorrow. I just don't know that, man. Like, do you really throw a Union 2 guy against someone like Salomón Rondón? Like, that would be, man, what type of test that would be?
If you play in the back three, maybe. I think it's the only thing to think of. And that was my biggest concern when they let Craig go on loan, especially, is that they didn't bring another defender in on loan just to give you that fourth option, you know. Not like an Orlin Cullen player, but just someone that you can just say to, like, look. Even like an Albus Powell when he came over, like, look, I appreciate you're going to come here and probably not play as much as you'd like. You'll like to. I mean, you will be the fourth choice. You'll be the emergency sort of centre half. But I feel like, you know, if, again, that's where that fourth choice, just have an extra depth there. Like, as you sort of alluded to just now, like, the amount of players that are going to go away not just March, but in the summer, you're going to lose Blake, Lowe, Harry, or maybe, you know, potentially Barzo for international duty as well. Like, the amount of defensive players you're going to be losing out on. Just having that fourth choice guy there that you know you can, who's reliable enough that you know when his number is called upon, he's going to do a job no matter what. And that was probably my biggest concern when Craig left. And as you sort of alluded to with Matt Riel as well, like, if he can't get in the team, like, again, if he's not even trusted to be your second choice left back, like, at points last year, like, he wasn't even trusted to be the third choice left back when Leon Flack was playing. Like, unless Jim just plays a back five and says, look, we'll play Real and... Well, even then, unless he plays Real and Kai as the... No, Harry and Kai, sorry, is like the two outside centre-backs. Glasner's in the middle, and then Baizo and Matt Real was like the wing-backs. I don't know how they're going to approach this. I really don't know.
It's such a puzzle, and I wish there was a way to be in that locker room today or tomorrow when the lineups get actually shared, because that's gonna be so interesting, you know. Like, how do you like shape yourself for this match, right? Obviously, you have a three-headed monster with Drisi and Rondón and you know. There was another guy there in the Eric Sanchez, I think it was his name. I can't remember, a Mexican international in the center of the park. But like, how do you deal with all that, and how do you work through that knowing that, you know, Glesnes, who has been shaky at best, with, I still think, not even really fully recovering from the hamstring injury or the sports hernia that he had last year, like, probably overcompensating for his injury. It'll be really interesting to see how they piece this nonsense together tomorrow. And gosh, man, like, they need to get a lead going into San Hidalgo, which is their stadium, because that's going to be 30,000 strong, and I can't imagine more than 300 for Philadelphia on the away leg for the Union.
Oh, 100%, it's going to be. Tomorrow, just so many question marks around the team. I think when looking at the team going forward, you sort of know what you're going to get. You're going to probably get Carranza and, you're going to get Carranza and who are in attack. Gazdag playing behind the two and the 10.
Well, Dave, Carranza is a game time decision tomorrow per Jim Curtin.
Okay, that then throws out the question of whether they start Chris Donovan in attack. Or do they go with Quinn playing a bit further forward and then dropping Bueno in? Because I think Bueno will start tomorrow. And I don't know if it's an outlandish shot. Again, we don't even know if Jose is going to be fit for tomorrow. Jose Martinez is going to be fit for tomorrow as well. Like,
Jim mentioned that he's fit and ready to go. I asked that question because initially, right, everybody or the guy from the Inquirer was asking about Blake and asking about Carranza, but then no mention of Martinez. And then I asked about Martinez, and Martinez, supposedly the substitution on Saturday was nothing but precautionary. So he should be okay, though. Man, I don't know. Watching, and you watched the game, watching the way that he stretched himself during that game, reaching for balls and even getting in tackles that were good tackles. I don't know. That stuff can linger and make itself known pretty quickly. Saying this out of experience. So I think the biggest question, Dave, is more of the back, because I think you can imagine Uwa, maybe Chris Donovan, Gastag, right? Then you have Martinez, I would say, at the six, Bueno on the right, McGlynn on the left. But then what happens with the back? I don't know, right? Yeah. You have Glesnes, Kai, Nate, and but Nate, is he on the right or is he a center back? And then you put in Baizo on the right. Like, it's gonna be a very interesting back line tomorrow. Not pretty, I don't think.
No, I think, again, maybe Bedoya starts tomorrow, maybe just to add that experience, maybe just in the team, just to give the team a bit more experience, whether it's for McGlynn or, I don't know, even on the right-hand side, I'm not too sure. I think, especially if your defense is going to be as frail as it looks like it might be, perhaps having that experience of Bedoya on one side, Bueno on the other, just to show things up and, you know, give yourself as good a chance as possible going into that away leg, perhaps not conceding an away goal, not giving yourself, or not putting yourself in that hole to begin with, would probably be absolutely massive for the team. I don't know how Jim would approach it, to be honest. Unless Tim just goes with guns to the wall and plays like, plays Sullivan and everyone, throws Sullivan out there as well and just says, look, we'll just go for it. But I think, again, we sort of saw, I mean, the team conceded three goals against Saprissa in 90 minutes. So I'm like, again, that was probably a stronger
two goals from Saprissa in 28.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, like, again, like, and they conceded two goals in the, again, they conceded five goals in two games against Saprissa, and that was with a fully strength back line. So obviously Andre Blake wasn't there, but that was with a back four that he had confidence and thought would be competent going into the game. So again, they have a difficult one fit centre half, and you've got a player like Rondon who, no disrespect to Rondon, he's nowhere near the quality perhaps he was 6-7 years ago when he was at the peak of his powers in the Premier League at West Brom. But again, he's still a big bulldozer that if a player...
You don't remember him? You don't rate him from his time in Newcastle or Everton?
Well, I don't... Again, he was great at Newcastle as well, but I mean, really, he
Everton, he was forgetful. That totally... a blip.
He was at his best at West Brom. How good he was at West Brom was ridiculous. And again, at Newcastle,
he was a bully.
Yeah, 100%. Like, the job, especially in his... Because I remember, like, he was obviously at Newcastle for a couple of years and Benitez left and he went to West Brom. But again, in those years, he probably isn't the same player as then now. But I think, again, like, when you're going to be playing up against a potential fullback, you've probably got like 3 or 4 inches on.
This is a good question. This is a very good question, and sort of alludes to what you're talking about. I know we're coming up to time because I want to prove Todd Lewis wrong. how do they approach this game, right? How do you go defensive? I don't think that the Union try to go to Mexico to win a game there. I think that what they want to do is secure themselves two goals, maybe three, and just bend and not break while away. Like, that feels like a very difficult thing to do in Mexico. I think tomorrow is, as low as the standards are, a success if it's 0-0, mission accomplished if it's 1-2. But it's hard to say absolute failure if they go, you know, they lose 1-0. Certainly a absolute failure if Pachuca come and get two goals, even if it's a 2-1, like a 2-1 or a 3-1 scoreline with Pachuca on top, might as well not even bother, honestly, going to Mexico and trying to win it. That's such a difficult task that I think tomorrow is sort of the benchmark to see where this goes.
Oh, 100%. I think it's going to be a big night in the season, but obviously, I wouldn't say it's a mark, but indicate of how the rest of the season will go, but I think it will definitely show the sort of resolve this team has got. I mean, they've showed a lot of it already this year. Bending, not breaking in Kansas, you know, holding their nerve against Saprissa in the game last week. They could have easily folded. They could have easily, you know, gone on to see the fourth, even with 10 men in extra time. They could have easily rolled over there. So this team's got resolve. It's just about whether the quality is there defensively to hold off. We are going to make sure we get the show done in under 45 minutes. So before we head off, what's your score prediction for tomorrow?
I think that tomorrow will be a 2-1 victory for the Union. So maybe I'm a little more positive than I think, though. That away goal for Pachuca is just going to be sort of a dagger in the back of things, right? Because that makes the global score sort of draw, all things considered. But 2-1, and I think Carranza does play. I do wonder if he starts. So I'm going to say that Gazdag and Sullivan will get a goal tomorrow. And then I think Rondon, if I'm Solomon Rondon tomorrow, I am getting a yellow early on against Glesnes just to show or really push the boundary against Glesnes just to show, hey, I'm here and I mean business. Because I genuinely don't think that Glesnes this year so far, and sure, he's played against Kuipers, et cetera, but like he has not faced someone like Rondon this year yet. No. And that guy is, he's a bully. He's a big time bully.
Yeah, Rondon is even probably at this level, which could be, it's probably, I don't sound like I'm being extremely disrespectful, but the difference from the Premier League to the MLS and that standard is such, it's quite a big standard. I mean, again, it's probably a sort of level that he could definitely play at. No disrespect to the MLS, it's a good league, good quality. But even then, there's a big difference, a big drop off in the quality in the Premier League. And we saw that tonight in the Arsenal Sheffield United game, just how big the quality within the league is itself. But yeah, I think there's a drop off, and I wouldn't be shocked to see Rondon, them obviously try and have Rondon run the show for them. And with the Idrissi and players like that feeding off him, holding up the ball and trying to bully the Union defenders. I know it's probably upset you, Jose. I'm going to go for a 2-2 draw. I think the Union obviously have that attacking prowess, but I just don't think they can hold up defensively, especially if I can't imagine they're going to risk Blake for this. I can't imagine they'll risk Blake. You know,
Blake is starting tomorrow.
You reckon he's starting?
Blake is starting tomorrow, yes.
Okay. Like starting, so I mean, then I still say 2-1. I just think defensively, there's only so much Andre can do, especially coming back from an injury. One that obviously we sort of hampered his kicking, hampered his distribution a bit. You know, it's definitely something that, you know, that sort of injury where you obviously throwing yourself around, which is obviously going to make him. I just got to go 2-2 draw, unfortunately. Goal scorers for me, Carranza if he starts, if he doesn't, a Gazdag and Quinn Sullivan off the bench.
Fair enough. Dave, let's wrap this up with 2 minutes to go. I thank you so much for your time. As you hear, the circus has arrived behind me with Raphael, who is the one who stays up past 8 o'clock now. myself and Mike will be at the game. We both will be at the press conference, I think, afterwards. I'll certainly be sticking around for the mix zone with the players and asking some questions. And listen, I personally hope that it's a good result and a good result that propels the Union to the way, like being somehow not a mountain, but something that they can actually climb without feeling like it's a mountain. So keep an eye out for content from me following that match. Dave, your final thoughts before maybe we wrap up?
Yeah, I don't know if we'll be able to watch the game live tomorrow. I've got another start because I'm off to Barrow. A good old round trip, a good old long journey to Barrow. So I'm looking forward to that. But I'll definitely make sure to watch the game, and fingers crossed, you know, just don't get beat. Just have something to play for in Pachuca, and you know, I give yourself a chance.
So absolutely. Course. So with that, I'll close it out, Dave. So with that, Dave GFC Miller on Twitter, Jose R Nunes 91 on Twitter. You can follow me, follow Dave M Barrera 1323, I think it is, on Twitter. Dave, myself, and Mike all get on this podcast and talk together once a week, twice a week. And let's see what happens, man. And maybe we can regroup and talk about Seattle for the weekend. But for now, that is everything from Across the Pitch. We are 10 seconds shy of the 45-minute mark. Todd Lewis, you lost. Thank you so much, everybody. Bye-bye.